A pleasure to speak to you, Pam.
Yeah, thanks for calling and thanks for having me on.
Quite a thing is going on that you're working with the Millions Against Monsanto.
Well, actually, I'm a part of, I work with the Organic Consumer Association, but I'm not on their staff. And so what I'm actually involved in is I have organized, I call myself the initial instigator of the 2012 ballot initiative to require labeling of genetically engineered foods. And we have been working with the Organic Consumer Association. One of their programs is the Million Against Monsanto campaign, but they also call it the Truth in Labeling campaign. So that's what we're really focusing on. And rallies on October 16th, but I can talk about that a little bit more. So anyway, our effort is labelgmos.org, but we're working, like I said, very closely with the Organic Consumer Association because they're so committed to getting labeling.
What is some of your background? What led you to this point?
Okay, so what led me to this point was that I began studying about genetically engineered stuff probably about 6 or 7 or 8 years ago. Can't quite remember when it first came on the radar. And the more I studied, the more I got frustrated and upset and concerned because of the health risks that were being proven and all the other issues around genetically engineered stuff. And just the fact that I was very angry that we didn't have a right to know about what was in our foods and that we were being forced to buy stuff that many of us would choose not to to consume or to feed our children. And that's a really big one there. So I started reading more and more and studying, and then last year I really started devoting a lot of time to it and started to get quite depressed, actually, and reached this point where I was just about catatonic. And then one morning on January 20th, I was lying in a bed in San Francisco and around 7 o'clock in the morning and on hover state, and quite literally it just came to me to do this. So I started in January. That was on the 20th. On the 27th, they deregulated alfalfa, which is going to impact our milk and dairy foods. Then on February 3rd, they deregulated the sugar beets. And then on February 10th, they did the biodiesel corn. So I felt like my my inspiration had been quite timely. So it took about 6 weeks to learn about how to do an initiative and how to strategize a lot. Started reaching out a little bit, but not really very much because I wanted to be organized before that went out there. Got a website put together, which is labelgmos.org. So it's with an S there, with the GMOs part.
Okay.
And that's labelgmos.org. And then went live on March 10th. And my strategy was to just reach out to people personally, put up a Facebook page, started calling around, started going on these trips. I call it the GMO-free gypsy tour.
Oh, GMO-free. Okay.
So I'm actually right now, I'm in Sunnyvale, California. Last night I was in Half Moon Bay. This week I've also been in Mendocino, Napa, Placerville. I started off in Southern California, and they're really very organized down there now. And just about 3 weeks ago, I started setting my sights north. So I am here in Sunnyvale, and I'm not going to be back in my hometown of Chico until September 2nd.
Oh.
Then I take a short break over Labor Day weekend and sleep and watch a lot of TV so I can veg out. And then I start again on September 6th and run until October. So I am very, very busy now, and the state is getting very excited and very mobilized and very on task. So it's really very, very exciting.
Yes, indeed. And in terms of who is okaying, what is the process of okaying these crops for GMO? What part of the government is doing that?
Okay, well, at this point in time, the USDA and the FDA are doing them. And the USDA does it, mostly it's the USDA, but the salmon that's being up for deregulation, which we're getting word that will probably be regulated soon, is through the FDA as a drug. But generally speaking, it's usually through the USDA, and this is how they do it. Because they use bacteria and virus when they do the genetic engineering, because you see our genetic material doesn't really want to be messed with, so they have to use a virus and bacteria to get the new material in there and stay. It falls under what's called APHIS, and I can't remember what APHIS stands for, but it has to do with pest regulation. Okay, so a lot of the pesticides and stuff fall under there. So all of the deregulation has been falling with that because of the microbe, you know, the bacteria and the virus. But one of the things that's particularly frightening at this point in time, this is why I believe we're really at a juncture here, is that Kentucky bluegrass was just deregulated. Well, it wasn't even deregulated because it didn't have to be, because we used a different process than the virus and the microbe. So it didn't fall within any of the regulatory loopholes, you know, I mean, any of the regulatory slots that APHIS has. So now they don't even have to go through any kind of a deregulatory process if they use that method of genetic engineering. That's very frightening.
Yeah, now, what would they want with Kentucky bluegrass?
Well, what would they want with it? They are genetically engineering it to be Roundup ready, which means that Roundup is a form of an herbicide that contains an ingredient called glyphosate. And so they're using it so that they can spray the heck out of golf courses and playgrounds and our lawns, and they don't have to worry that the grass itself will die. Unfortunately, one of the reasons I'm really very concerned about in the initiative is that they also feed it to cattle, like along with the alfalfa, they feed it to cattle and other grange animals. So it'll be in our food supply. You know, not only will it be in the foods, not only will it be sprayed to all heck, and our kids might be out there playing, but we will also be ingesting it via the animals.
Wow, so it's on all sides. We're walking on it, we're eating it, everything.
Everything, yes. Surrounded by genetically engineered stuff and all the stuff spray on it.
Now,
which is an important thing, you know, because for the initiative, we're asking for the right to know what's in our food. So it's not only the genetically engineered material that we're concerned about, although that's primarily what it is, but the minute you start using genetically engineered seed, it automatically comes with an increased load of pesticides and herbicides, because that's what they genetically engineer it for. Mm. One of the important things to remember is that genetic engineering has absolutely no benefits. There's nothing there for the consumer. It doesn't increase, it doesn't make taste better, it doesn't, you know, increase anything, it does nothing for us.
Yeah.
What it does do is it creates a situation where the people who grow it can spray the heck out of it and not have to pull weeds by hand, possibly, although that's changing too. I don't like to diverge from the health risk thing, but there, because of all these herbicides and pesticides, we're creating super weeds and super bugs. So that's another issue. So there's just stronger herbicides are being used, dicamba, 2,4-D. Different plants are being genetically engineered to resist, to be resistant to those, so that, you know, when the farmer sprays the dicamba or the 2,4-D, the plant doesn't die. So our foods are being sprayed a lot more. So there's also the issue of the pesticides and the herbicides on the food.
Ooh.
Yeah, I call this the buzzkill conversation.
Yeah, it's sort of jaw-dropping stuff, really.
Yeah.
Is Monsanto the power behind it? Is there other people doing this? Where is this coming from?
Well, it's not just Monsanto. There are a number of companies throughout the world that do genetically engineered stuff. There's a new movie that folks can watch online. It's called The Idiot Cycle. And you can buy it and stream it from your computers, or if you can hook them up to your TVs, whatever. But it talks about how all the same companies that create the chemicals and the GMOs and the pesticides and herbicides that you use along with them are also the kind folks that make us our cancer drugs. So that's a really great movie to watch to see the connection there. And even in that movie, there are plenty of other companies that do this, so it's not just one.
Well, that's scary. So it's like again, hand in glove. They do one thing, but they also the cause of it also helps their other businesses. Then,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great little loop there for them, I would imagine, you know, increase profit quite a bit. Give people cancer and then, you know, give them drugs that make them sicker.
I mean, what a dichotomy is, you know, certainly in Sonoma County, you know, more and more people are going organic, and yet here we have this whole split going on. A huge amount of people doing very well just being organic and doing it the natural way, and yet here's big industry going totally the other way, 180 degrees.
It's pretty crazy. It's almost like, you know, schizophrenic on one hand, you know, because the organic industry is exploding, and yet at the same time these other folks, it's more and more stuff is being genetically engineered. I mean, right now we have five big ones in this country. There's corn, canola, soy, cottonseed, and sugar beets. So, but that's those are the big ones right now. We also in this country have to worry about papaya from Hawaii and a few zucchini and crookneck squashes here in this country. But really, there's not a whole lot we're being told about. Other stuff we're being told about. However, in other countries, there's quite a bit going on. Rice and wheat are both, there are genetically engineered strains of both. The farmers in this country, you know, those agribusiness and the large farmers of both rice and wheat have refused to plant them because they don't want to lose their European, Japanese, you know, and other country, because there are about over 30 countries that are labeled. So they won't buy those products from the United States. It's being pushed now. The rice and the wheat are being pushed again. So, and if the wheat happens, I mean, just think about everything that has wheat in it. You know, it's like almost like corn, you know? You know, corn is in everything, you know, and the byproducts there. So it's pretty daunting. And then other countries, too, other products that are being developed right now and are close to being done are apples, so that they don't brown. I mean, really.
Oh,
do we care if our apples brown? Okay, plum, a super sweet variety that... that is supposed to, is being genetically engineered out of India. They're pushing eggplant, okra, cauliflower, broccoli, peppers, and all sorts of stuff over in India. India, Africa, and Hawaii are like testing grounds and are being like inundated with this stuff. There are also milk. There are also animals that are starting to come on the market. There's the salmon that's like I mentioned earlier that's getting ready to be deregulated. And then there's also something called the enviro pig. And that's being genetically engineered so that it doesn't excrete as much phosphorus, so that all those big, you know, CAFO, confined factory feeding operation farms where the pigs are treated abysmally, they have a problem with too much phosphorus, so they decided that they would just genetically engineer the pig so that the poop didn't have as much problem. So isn't that lovely?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, now, it's pretty crazy,
Wow, what a... Oh, my goodness, that is... I didn't realize it had gone that far. Now, you know, you mentioned the wheat, not wanting to use the wheat and rice so far, but that's not the case with corn, American corn, in Europe?
Well, the corn that's being developed, that's being sold right now, like, I want to be clear that they don't plant the wheat and the rice here, as far as I know. Some people say that it is being planted, but as far as I've heard and studied, we don't have the white rice and wheat here yet because people don't want to lose their, the farmers don't want to lose their market, okay? But the corn is being sold. It's really quite interesting. They're not supposed to be being, it's not supposed to be sold in the EU because they have genetically engineered labeling. They don't have it for their animals, though. And the corn that's actually engineered is mostly for animal feed and also for tortillas and stuff like that.
Huh.
There is some sweet corn on the market right now, but for the most part, that's new. But next year, it should be pretty prolific as the seeds are going on sale this fall.
Mm.
So sweet corn will be added. I forgot about that one to put that in there, too.
That's they're really making a comprehensive move, then.
Yes. And the other thing, the other part of the buzzkill conversation that I really like to point out to people is that the corn and the canola are contaminated. I don't know if you've heard about the non-GMO project. Okay, well, they are an organization that actually tests in two ways all the different foods through a chemical process and also through a like an affidavit history sort of thing. Because some products like the canola, if you do the test, the markers for those, the chemical tests, the markers for those are not in the oil anymore. Hmm. You know, the testing markers. So they do this affidavit system thing where they trace it back. The thing about those, though, is that when I talk to the Non-GMO Project, and they're a great organization, and I really encourage folks to, you know, to look for foods that have the Non-GMO Project symbol. It's like a butterfly on a flower or a leaf or something like that, and it says Non-GMO Project. And you can find them on, you know, you're pretty safe. If you look at their standards, they do have a 0.5% contamination rate because everything's contaminated, you know, all the corn and the soy. I mean, corn and canola are contaminated. Soy, not so much because it's an internal pollinator, but the other two are cross pollinators. So even though it says USDA corn on it, it may be contaminated. You've got a lot better chance of it, you know, being lower amounts if you do the USDA certified. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I just tell that to people because people seem to think that, you know, everything's okay as long as I buy organic.
Right.
Or the other thing is if you go in a health food store, you think you're safe, but you still have to read your labels.
Interesting. So who is actually, is the government testing? You know, you have a non-GMO project, they're testing. Is the government or is it the companies and the companies are giving the government information? How is that, does that work?
Okay, the Non-GMO Project is a private NGO. There is no, the USDA standard for organic says that there are no genetically engineered stuff in it. However, there's no testing that goes on a governmental level, or very little. So it's not being caught. But if you, like I said, the Non-GMO Project is a non-government organization, private, and different businesses contact them directly, and then they, you know, they get their foods tested, and then they get them certified.
Mm.
So the government does very little to nothing.
Well, now,
and in fact,
yeah.
Another very disturbing development just this past, like, I think month and a half, is that the USDA came out with a new policy guideline that says that the biotech industry can do its own environmental impact report studies.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so that was a great ruling there.
They're really good at looping it all back around, aren't they?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Where did we split with Europe? I mean, why did Europe go one way and we went another? I mean, they have the same companies working on it. What happened there?
Well, one of the things that I find very, very interesting is all the food companies like Kellogg, or I'm not trying to single out anyone particular. I'm just saying all the food companies that create these foods have two versions. There's a version for Europe and there's a version for the United States.
Hmm.
You know, the version in Europe has no GMOs. We get the GMOs. How did it happen? Well, that's a very good question. It happened in the early 90s where our FDA came up with a policy of what's being called substantial equivalence. And so what that means is that they say because it looks the same and grows the same, and there's nothing substantially different between the genetically engineered food and ours. Europe, however, operates with the precautionary principle, which says that we will not do anything that is, you know, that we haven't thoroughly tested and don't feel thoroughly comfortable with.
Mm.
The other thing that's different is that, you know, it's a different culture. And what happened was the people of the EU stood up, rallied, and said, get these things out of our, you know, we want them labeled. Okay, we want them labeled and we want it now.
Mm-hmm.
And they continue to do things like I was talking to, actually, it's so funny, I live in Chico, and it ends up that one of the very first GMO activists lives there. It's a man named Luke, and he's from the UK, and he started, and a group he started with, were doing, at that time, they had to register where all the genetically engineered crops were. So they would get people out there, and, you know, like he said, little old ladies and men with, you know, tweeds and tweed hats and canes out there pulling all of the crops out.
Huh.
They also organized these protests where little old ladies with shopping carts used to go into the grocery stores and fill up their grocery carts with food and then all go to the checkout counters at the same time and lift each food, you know, the item out one at a time, saying, does this contain genetically engineered stuff? It's this. So that's kind of what started it, the people. And, you know, the people here just didn't know. You know, we have no clue. I mean, I talk to people who are into nutrition. I just saw one last night. She's great. She's been a nutritionist forever, and she didn't even hear about this until 2 years ago.
Wow.
So it's not something that's talked about much, and we have a lot of educating to do.
Yes, indeed. I know, just I think yesterday or the day before, I read that Hungary discovered they had a whole bunch of GMO crops, and they're pulling them all out. I don't know if you saw that. That was very interesting.
They're going, I think they're the ones that are pretty darn progressive with this whole thing, and they're getting pretty vigilant about it. Another country that has put a moratorium on genetically engineered stuff is Peru. So that's pretty exciting. So, you know, and for the purposes of this, I mean, we're talking about the world, talking about a lot of stuff, but right here, right now, what we're talking about is California and our right to know what's in our food.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in this country, we're not thinking we can get a ban because it's just too complicated, you know, and too, there's too much corporate interest in keeping the status quo going. But we think and we believe and we're pushing for, well, okay, fine, you get to grow what you want. We get to know what we're buying. You know, it's no longer acceptable for us to be, you know, have, you know, you get to make your non-transparent profit at the expense of our right to informed choice. So it's just not right.
And so that really comes into what you're doing now in terms of raising awareness and having meetings all over the state to promote the hopefully upcoming proposition for next year.
Yes. Yes, it's very exciting. So I go to towns and folks get all fired up, and then usually someone comes forward as the local leader, and they start organizing. They start getting their groups going. They, you know, usually it's a cooperative sort of thing. They have lectures. They show movies. They have outreach to different groups, like parent groups and, you know, churches, political groups, you know, all over the place. We're doing a lot of tabling at festivals and in front of grocery stores. And just educating people, giving out non-GMO shopping guides as often as we can, literature, just looking people in the eye and telling them what we're doing, why we're doing it, and, you know, to educate themselves more. So it's a huge educational campaign. And so even though the election is, you know, is a ways off, we have to gather signatures. We're going to start gathering our signatures in October, end of October. So we invite people to take a pledge to help us gather signatures. You can go online on our website, again, that's labeledgmos.org, and you'll find, you know, this little hand that says make a pledge, and there are four different pledge levels. I like to tell people that, you know, they're going to get all the instructions that they need. We're going to have local training. We're also going to have stuff online in the form of video and written material. And so they'll have a lot of education on how to go about doing it the right way. And so they'll get that support. And then, yeah, there's a commitment. They get hooked into the campaign, and we're on our way.
Are there any other large organizations, established organizations, that are with you or helping or sympathetic?
Well, there are quite a few that are sympathetic. Again, our closest ally is the Organic Consumer Association. And we're, like I said, we're working very closely with them. For the educational portion of the campaign, we're working with Institute for Responsible Technology. They're not involved in the initiative itself, but they're very involved, and we use a lot of the Institute for Responsible Technology's educational material because it's really great. And so there are them. The National Organization for Women has come out in support of this with their Ecofeminist branch or platform. The California State Grange is in support of genetically engineered food labeling. And we're talking to quite a few organizations. So, you know, everything's in process.
And it's just grassroots financed, I assume.
Well, yeah. At this point, we're just grassroots financed, and we need all the help we can get because initiatives are very, very expensive. We're looking for folks, you know, to talk to about larger donations, so larger funding, and, you know, just if those larger funders are out there, to please contact us, because there's more information that we can give you that might entice you even more.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what would your proposition give us?
It will give us labels on foods that tell us if there's genetically engineered ingredients in the food.
Mm-hmm. And it would just, literally, it would just, there would be a sticker on it saying it is or isn't in it. Very simple
the
thing like that.
The exact logistics of how it will be labeled are being worked out with lawyers and all that kind of good stuff and regulators just to make sure that, you know, it's all copacetic and will pass muster.
Well, I suppose if there's legislation, the food manufacturers would have to, you know, obviously label it themselves, just like they put like a kosher symbol on or something else. It would just be another button on the label, I presume.
Yeah. Well, again, I don't know how that's all going to work out in the end. If it's going to be something that needs to be on the front of the package, or if it needs to be in the ingredients part, but all that stuff, you know, is being worked out as to what's the best way to get it, the initiative passed, and what's the best way to do the labeling for all concerned.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you mentioned salmon a little while ago. Will they have, they'll modify the salmon so it has a little label on it saying it's genetically modified?
Really, kind of like the hazards, you know, the bio-waste hazard, you know, biohazard symbol in, you know, seared into its side, you know.
Yeah.
Like but, no, I mean, obviously it'll have to have it on the package.
Yeah.
You know, the initiative will require that all genetically engineered ingredients and foods be labeled. So the salmon would be considered a genetically engineered food, so it would need to be labeled, as will the pig.
Right. So even if, say, the only one, one small ingredient is GMO in that package, it would still be labeled, or it has to be, or would there be only a majority?
It would have to have labeling, however that ends up turning out. Mm-hmm. You know, if it will be like a blank on the front, may contain genetically engineered ingredients, or if on the back, each of the in the ingredient thing, it'll have a little asterisk that says, you know, genetically engineered or something like that. In Europe, that's what they do, is they highlight each item. So if there's corn that's been genetically engineered, it actually has to have the name of the patent there. Mm-hmm. I've looked up before.
Mm, excellent, excellent. Now, what reaction are you getting to these meetings? I mean, are people just dumbfounded? Are they incensed? A bit of everything? What's going on?
Oh, you mean in terms of the information that we're giving out?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, there are two different kinds of meetings that we have. One is informational meetings and educational meetings, and those would be for people like at schools or, you know, festivals or stuff like that, and that's just where we're letting people know about genetically engineered food. Those are the educational meetings. But then things that I'm doing is I'm going around the state for the activist meeting. And generally speaking, the people who are at the activist stage know about that stuff already. You know, I'll give them an update because a lot of times even though people know about genetically engineered foods and they know the issues, a lot of times they aren't aware with the most current stuff. You know, I do this all the time every day. So I'm like reading. And a lot of people don't have that kind of time. So I'll update them on stuff, but, you know, most of the people there have already heard about a lot of it because that's why they're there, because they care.
Yeah.
So those folks, you know, the first group might be kind of upset, you know, and depressed. I mean, there's actually, like, I figured out there's a grieving process that people go through of sorts when they discover this real situation and what they've been feeding their children and, you know, just that they haven't known and all this stuff. So the situation is getting pretty dire, and so many people get very upset. But by the time they come to an activist meeting, they are very upset, but in a different kind of way. They're, like, ready to change it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of going through that, you know, depression, what can I do? I mean, there's all sorts of things that you go through, you know, because, you know, you look at this, and you know, it's a situation, and it's overwhelming. It's like it's easy to shut down because it seems so impossible. But I like to remind people that united, and when we all join together, as cheesy as it sounds, you know, we're in charge here. You know what I mean? Like, we're the consumers, and so we're the ones that have the power to change this. But we have to act. I mean, for years and years and years, the basic thing has been among GMO folks is that you vote for your with your dollars. You know, don't buy the stuff that has genetically engineered stuff.
Right.
Say something to people, you know, the producers or your store, and look for the non-GMO project thing. But if that's not enough anymore. We have to amp it up because we're at this crossroads. So it's going to take all of us working together to get this initiative on the ballot, and then one in next year, because you know that the biotech industry is going to be, you know, letting out a lot of information that is, you know, half-truths and misrepresentations. And we will never have as much money as they will.
Right.
So we have to rely on each other to educate ourselves and counter that voice.
Right. How has companies like Monsanto reacted to your work? Do they go to these meetings? Are they creating meetings of their own to counter it? Is anything happening overtly?
I have no idea. I've only run into a couple of folks who have been skeptics or negative about this. My guess is if they're at the meetings, they're silent, so I don't know that they're there. My guess is also that they pretty much look at this as like it will probably fizzle and die because it's just a bunch of people getting all riled up and it'll never go anywhere. So, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing with the answer. I have no idea.
Yeah, there's no direct communication then with them in any way.
No. Mm-mm. No.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very careful about singling them out because the first place, they aren't the only ones,
right?
So that's just my spiel on that one. Yeah, I don't name names usually.
Okay.
You know, sometimes it comes out, but I generally don't, you know, use names. It's just an industry.
It seems like, from my own memory, it seems like, I don't know, 15 years ago when it seemed like that farmer got sued.
Percy Schmeiser?
Yeah, because their pollen, their genetically modified pollen, went onto his plants, and they sued him. That was a mind-boggling event in my book.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is a mind-boggling event. But he's not the only one.
Are they still suing
cases,
people?
What?
Are they still suing people?
Yes. My understanding is yes. I'm not 100% sure, but my understanding is that they have folks that run around primarily in the Midwest trying to find people who have been either contaminated or they think are, you know, or whatever. You know, I heard 75, but, you know, I don't work there, so I don't know what the exact situation is. But people are still being sued, yes, definitely.
Wow. And is anything happening in other parts of the country, any other states?
Oh, you mean in terms of an initiative?
Yes.
No, there is not that I know of. There are 17 or 18 states considering legislation. Also on a national level, there's been a move to get national labeling since 1999 through the legislature. I think it was just last week, the co-ops throughout the United States, in conjunction with a number of different organizations and companies, are coming out with a move. They're calling it an initiative and a campaign, but it's not a state-based ballot initiative, you know, because those words can mean a lot of things. But they're pushing for federal labeling. So this is, you know, there's this thing called the Right to Know March. I don't know if your listeners or you know about it, but you can find it online. Right, R-I-G-H-T, letter 2, know, K-N-O-W, march.org. And they are marching on October 1st. They're leaving New York, and they're walking to Washington, D.C., and ending up there on the 16th to hold a rally in front of the White House to demand labeling for genetically engineered foods. In California, we're planning sister rallies. We've got one already being organized in San Diego, one in Los Angeles, one in San Francisco. We're trying to find someone that wants to help organize one in Sacramento, but no one's stepped forward to do that just yet. But yeah, they should be great events, and we'd love large numbers of people to show up.
Yes, indeed. I presume you're using all the modern-day communication systems to help,
yes.
Tweeting and Facebook and things?
Yes. Yes, yes. You can get to our Facebook page through our website, which again is labeled gmos.org. And we have a Facebook page. Also, encourage folks to contact us and get involved. If you do, just do the contact through the website and let me know where you're from. I can hook you into the groups that are going on. We have events going all over the place. You know, again, we're a grassroots organization with, you know, limited funding, so we're doing the best that we can. Mm-hmm. And we should have a calendar of events up within a week or so. We're just trying to figure out the system of how to get all the different leaders to be able to put all their information on there. We should also have a list of all the local coordinators by next week. Anyway, so, yeah, we're working. Working it.
Oh, good. I'm glad there is something happening out there apart from here in California. But it seems like...
Oh, well, in terms of an initiative, there isn't, though. I mean, it's tremendously complicated, I knew it was going to be complicated, but I'm sure glad I didn't know it was going to be this complicated or I might not have started. So folks, especially when I first started out, different states contacted me, and at first I thought it would be really cool if a bunch of states did it. But since then, you know, when I've talked to political people and people who've done something like this before, this is so huge, this is so big, this is so important that we need all eyes from all around the country. We need help. We need support both financially and in all different ways from all around the country, because what we do here will impact the whole country. But we also feel like we need to focus on one initiative at first to get it passed, because it's going to take all of us working together. And then once we've got this crack in the door, then we can move out. So for this election, I'm encouraged, even though originally I was encouraging all the states, you know, because there are 24 states with initiatives, I've since changed, because I really... this is going to be huge, and it's going to be very, very, very impactful. And so you know that there's going to be a tremendous amount of opposition.
Yep.
You know, we have to raise millions of dollars for a campaign next year so that we don't get defeated, because if we get defeated, it will be horrific for the whole non-GMO crowd, because then biotech can say, oh, look, see, when they're given an opportunity to vote, they won't vote for it.
Yep.
So it's really, really important that we all join hands together to get this passed. And then once it's passed, we can go out into the other states. We can do all sorts of stuff, because the Organic Consumer Association is committed to keep working on it until we've got it in every 24 states or something federal happens.
Yeah. Now, has polling been done around to get some idea of what people are thinking, if they are thinking about it, and what they would like to see happen?
Well, there have been all sorts of polls that have been done, you know, I mean, in the past. There's a lot of stuff, you know, that I can't really talk about. And but I will say that there have been a lot of polls done all over the country. We all know about them. And all those polls say that, you know, anywhere between, depending on the poll you read, it's, you know, 68 or 72 to up to 96% of the people polled want to see labeling. Yeah, it's big. You know, it usually averages about 78% to 82%, which is huge in politics, you know,
yes,
for that many people.
Very.
And there have been some polls which have shown that even with the people who are asked outright, would you vote today, about 78% will say yes, they want labeling. And even if they're given a counter argument, something about, well, what about feeding the world, which is a big myth, and what about cost? And what about this and that, still only goes down about 6 points. So without any kind of education at all. So we know that, you know, people want this. They believe it's their right to know, and it is.
Yeah. To pull those numbers down, that's going to take hundreds of millions of dollars, I would imagine, of effort by the those companies.
You cannot buy the grassroots thing. You cannot buy the power of us joining together. So that's what we're doing now. We're forming what I call an army of peaceful warrior, non-GMO warriors.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of work to do to, you know, around our food system. You know, this is there's a lot of stuff going on. You know, Farm Bill's happening next year, and you know, there's just a lot of stuff going on. And you know, we all care about all different kinds of stuff going on with our food. Mm-hmm. You know, we want the organic standards to be tightened up. We want, anyway, there's a lot of stuff we want.
Yeah, just the organic standards is a whole other thing all by itself, mm-hmm. isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it is. But, I mean, you know, certainly it's, on the face of it, you know, putting something on a label doesn't, you know, I mean, it doesn't seem to be a big deal, but obviously there's so much behind it, that little change on the label that makes such big impacts.
Well, you know, we don't know what the impact will be. I mean, bottom line is we don't know what the impact will be. But we do know that the, you know, the folks that, that have a vested interest in seeing genetically engineered foods remain unlabeled believe that it'll have a big impact, and so therefore they will do everything in their power, you know, to stop it. We're sure of that.
Yeah.
Nothing else. That, you know, we don't know what the outcome will be, but we do know that part.
Yeah, that's the given.
So yeah, we need everybody. We need, you know, we need you. We need everybody to help us, whether with their time or their funding or both. Mm-hmm. You know, really, I mean, I devote full time plus, like, the equivalent of two jobs to this every week.
Mm.
And I'm doing it volunteer. I'm blessed in that my kids are grown, mm-hmm. and I'm at least able to pay my bills because I live very frugally, but that's how important this is to me. And so while I'm not asking other people to quite, you know, devote their whole lives to it, I'm asking, please, you know, Steve, this is, like, this really important time for this whole thing. And at least I know that when, you know, in 5 years when, you know, I can't walk to the grocery store, you know, even in the food department without having to wonder what's there, what's not, mm-hmm. you know, what's genetically engineered or not. Because they've made it clear and they've stated they want 100% of the food supply to be genetically engineered.
Oh, dear.
You know, so, yes, that's what the goal is. And so, you know, I want to be able to look in the mirror and say I did everything I could.
Yeah.
The person that people step forward as leaders so that they can get hooked into the system. That sounds really bad, but like, you know, we have, you know, things, you know, like certain things that we hand out. We have to keep it a uniform message, okay, because politics is so complicated. In other words, it's like we've got to have this be a unified whole, and yet each area is kind of like acting independently. Does that make sense? It's not like, you know, there's these edicts from above, but they're general guidelines.
Yeah.
You know, like, for instance, So that's how we're operating that. And then when it's time to gather the signatures, we'll be having trainers come to the areas again to train everybody how to do it right. Again, we'll have other stuff online for the support of that, too.
Maybe you can let everyone know what, again, how to contact you and the various other organizations like the Organic Consumers Association and...
Sure. Okay, so... at this point, a whole lot of the Organic Consumer Association stuff in California just ends up in my email anyway. Mm-hmm. But people are welcome to contact them at organicconsumers.org. I encourage everybody to, you know, get on their mailing list. They have a tremendous amount of great information, and it hooks you up with the whole country around truth and labeling stuff going on around the whole country. Mm-hmm. And if they want to contact me directly, then it's you can do it through the website, which again is labeled gmos.org, or they are welcome to email me directly. My name is Pam, P-A-M-M, Larry, L-A-R-R-Y, so the email is P-Larry, L-A-R-R-Y again, at labelgmos.org. Don't forget that S in there.
What great work you're doing, Pam. I really appreciate it. It's been worrying me, this, and to know that there is something happening and people are working hard like you are, thank you so much. You're a hero, and great work, and keep it up. I know you will.
Yes, I will. I'm pretty unstoppable. So, yeah, thanks for all your work and for spreading the word. Okay, all right. You take care.
Thank you so much.